It's a very good point. I'd like to take, I think we're running a little bit over, but I would like to offer the opportunity, if anyone would like a chance, to ask one of our panelists a question. I realize some of you have planes to catch, and this has been, 3 days of listening and talking. But is there anyone? We have a couple of microphones set up around the room. Would anyone like to ask a question? Oh, yes, ma'am. Please.
What are other countries doing, or what are their rights like, and what can we learn from them?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear that. Did you ask about...
Are there other countries that have better outcomes or lower rates, and what can we learn from them, if so?
Panelists, is anyone familiar with what's going on in other countries?
I think without question we can always learn from what other countries are doing. I'm very hopeful that the International Violence Against Women Act will be passed in the near future, that will provide us with opportunities to exchange ideas and to exchange what we've learned through the years. I will say that when I was at the Office on Violence Against Women, I was always so heartened by the visits that we received from delegations of men and women from around the world who came to us to learn from us. And they were always in awe of how much we were getting done and how much money we had. And they wanted to learn about our legislation and how to pass it. But what struck me always in listening to their stories was that each community, as I said in my remarks, has its own way of approaching this problem. And I have no doubt that if we were to spend time in villages and small communities around this world, we would learn so much more than we know now. I have no doubt.
I mean, this is a global problem. 1 in 3 women will be victims of violence around the world. And what I have seen in working and meeting with some of those same groups is that grassroots groups of women around the world figure out very creative ways, sometimes with very few resources, and that we have a lot to learn from what other countries are doing as well.
Can I just say one quick thing, because I've had the opportunity to travel internationally doing this work over the years. And one thing, just an aside to this, what I'm always struck by is when you hear about the explanations or the exclusion or that batterers give, or the rationalizations that they give for why they assault their partners, they are exactly the same as the ones that I have heard in my batterers groups for the last 20 years. They say the same thing. So it really is sort of an attitudinal shift that has to be made, not just in this country, but globally. And it's clearly a gender issue wherever you go.
I remember I was with the police chief in Singapore, and I asked him about the issue of domestic violence, and he told me they didn't have any.
Well,
I don't even know what to say about that.
I've had the pleasure, like I said, to meet police officers from Italy, and I was quite surprised, and these were detectives, and they didn't have a very organized way of even investigating sexual assault and domestic violence cases. We had 3 visitors to the Bronx just this summer from Japan, and they were lawyers who were taking it upon themselves to begin to look at laws and to make changes, because they had one person trained to do forensic interviews of children in all of Japan. One person for a population of that size. Kenya just recently wrote and passed a Sexual Offense Act, and that was in 2009. They didn't have any laws that spoke to it before that. Before we went over there to train, nurses and doctors who actually provided the care to victims weren't allowed to testify in court. As a matter of fact, nurses couldn't testify at all. So a patient was seen in the hospital, the police surgeon would read the record, and then the police surgeon would make the determination as to whether or not this person was raped or sexually assaulted. And the first thing that jumped to my mind is, you're asking a medical person to draw a legal conclusion. So that, you know, so we, as bad as we are, other countries are looking to us. And I think with the resources and the knowledge that we have, we should be the leaders in this effort throughout the world. And so we have a lot of work to do.
I will say the Department of State has really showed a very strong leadership role in working with the UN last fall. When the United States chaired the Security Council, the UN passed Resolution 1888, putting teeth into coordination responses to sexual violence in areas of armed conflict. We've seen the State Department make a major commitment to this issue. So I really believe we are making our voice heard around the world, and we still have quite a lot of work to do.
We are running over. I know we have two people that are going to ask questions. Can we do it real quick? We'll give you both the opportunity, sir.
Sure. Hi, I'm a geriatrician from the University of California. I've not yet heard in this panel discussion much about violence against older women. Given the aging of America, would the panel like to comment about the challenges of addressing violence against older women?
Well, I'll say right now, and I'm so glad you raised that, that I believe it, just today the Associate Attorney General Tom Perrelli is with the Director of the Office on Violence Against Women, Judge Sue Carbon, and they're meeting with a group of women in California to talk about this very issue, women whose lives have been devastated by abuse over many years' time and who are older women, and without question, work like the National Coalition Against Abuse in Later Life and many of the other coalitions around the country. That the work that they're doing to raise awareness about this issue is extraordinary, and we cannot ever leave that population out. And I'm so glad you raised that, because it's absolutely so significant and very much a part of the VAWA.
One of the investigative points, and one of the other speakers had touched on it, this whole issue of abuse and sexual assault is really has very little to do with age, race, or anything else. But there is, I think, a tendency to make an assumption, and it is a false one, that there is some sort of magic age at which this stops, you know, being an issue. And from both statistical studies and just from operational experience, it's not true. And so it very much appreciate that the question was raised, because it is an important one.
Point. Yes, ma'am, you'll be our last question.
Thank you very much. I want to thank all of you for the work you've been doing on this topic. It's just tremendous. I'm a clinical psychologist in Maryland, and I just thought it was extremely interesting that the two men on the panel, the ones who talked about the information that is coming in terms of video games and music and what have you, forming the opinions of boys as they are growing into young men, and all of the just the whole media is such a big problem in this area in terms of really objectifying women. And I don't know exactly where we start on this, but there's just no question at all that that has an effect. Persuasion works. That's why we have commercials. And there are meta-analyses that have been done in the American Psychological Association Journal of years and years and years of research on this. If you see something, you learn from it. And over, you learn even more. I don't know exactly where to start with this in the criminal justice field, but if you have any ideas of where you would like to see all of us work on it, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
I think it would, and I don't know where it would land legally, but at some point, some definitive work that sort of academically establishes that connection is critical. Because to me, the whole free speech argument, which is what clouds all of this and sort of prevents us from dealing with internet pornography and dealing with just the whole messaging that goes on, I think people always raise it because, well, there's no linkage. There's no causal linkage that you can show. And I think for the academic researchers in the audience, that's an important place to go. We need to have something besides somebody's personal opinion to point to.
It does exist.
I think Barney makes a good point, and it's one that we've been trying to make throughout this entire conference, is the purpose of the research is to confirm what we feel in our gut. Mm-hmm. Right? To be able to go to the judge, to be able to go to the mayor with the evidence to show that what is happening is real, that there's scientific evidence to support what we know is happening out there. So I think that's a perfect way to end this panel. I want to thank the troopers in this room who have stayed with us all of this time. Thank you so much. Thank you to our panelists. You were magnificent. Thank you, Paula Zahn, for your remarks. And I will officially adjourn the NIJ conference for 2010. Thank you.